Hey, Dale.
Hey, Anna. How are you doing on this fine day?
Well, it looks like it could be storming soon. Don't know. I've been getting harassed by the Dog Longevity Project. Are you familiar with that?
DLP?
The DLP, Dog Longevity Project. My dog, Rue, who is a mix of probably 17 different breeds, is part of the Dog Longevity Project. And they try to find out whether it's the food, the exercise, your scintillating personality, or some other thing that is going to lead to dogs living a long, 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 long life. The trouble is with this thing is they ask too much of its participants. I'm supposed to go out in the back and do these hiding of treats and things like that with the dog and then fill out all these surveys and what am I feeding her now? And I'm like, there's been no change. There's been no change. There's been no change. Please stop sending me stuff.
She's a dog. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were mentioning that you have some dear friend who just had had a colonoscopy, and then that there was some possible issue of your dog having a colonoscopy?
The threat is always there, right? You never know at what point fate is going to give your dog a colonoscopy. But no, the vet hasn't brought that one up, but I'm sure they will, and I'm sure it'll cost a lot of money.
It does seem that there's always something new that they want you to spend right. Your money on.
And then they always give you that sort of cold, I mean, it's not without its element of compassion, but they just sort of, when you go like, oh, a dialysis for $900, should I do that? And they just kind of look at you and sort of half smile. Yeah, it's like when I go to, have my car fixed. It's like, oh, your triple phlegmometer is getting gloompy. And I'm like, oh, okay. So yeah, I sometimes feel that way, but I feel like my dogs give plenty of attention to their butts. So I don't necessarily think that a colonoscopy is in the cards.
No, because what would you do if they had polyps anyway? I mean, some people would actually have their special Bison frieses operated on probably, but you know.
Yeah. And I don't mean to be so cavalier, even though I have a cavalier spaniel, but I do feel like I probably would do everything I could if my pup was stricken with polyps. Uncertain.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave? Uncertain.
I can't think about that today. I'll think about that tomorrow. Uncertain.
You can't handle the truth.
Uncertain. You know how to whistle, don't you? You just put your lips together and blow.
Do you feel lucky?
That's all.
Uncertain.
Come on up and see me sometime.
Oh. All right. Well, should we talk about a movie?
I guess so, because I feel like we kind of reached a dead end with this particular subject. So why don't we go on our merry way to the reason we're here, right?
The reason we're here is to tell people about movies they might like if they are of an uncertain age or of a certain age. Whichever.
Yeah, you're going to bring up, I feel like it's one of, like, when people think of movies of an uncertain age, they think of this movie.
Yes, it is a 1985 comedy, kind of a sci-fi fiction comedy drama about a group of retirement home residents somewhere on the coast of Florida, and three residents played by, how about these for throwbacks, Don Ameche, who won the Oscar for his Best Supporting Actor role, Hume Cronyn, and Wilford Brimley. Can you guess, folks? It's Cocoon. And these three venture off property and they start swimming in the abandoned swimming pool next door. Soon, large pods are placed in the pool, and soon thereafter, the three gents are feeling their youthful vigor surge anew. They're young again, much to the bemusement and in some cases consternation of the women in their lives. By the way, Jessica Tandy, who is married to Hume Cronyn, plays his wife in the film. They are perfect. This film was directed by Ron Howard, Opie. I think it was his first feature, possibly.
You know how I knew? Is because Clint Howard was in it. And the only times you ever see Clint Howard are in Ron Howard movies.
Oh, there you go. Well, when this movie came out, it was odd. It was considered odd. Old people meet aliens and things go pretty well, right? Because that's what's in the pods. Duh. The movie is still odd, but it's like a good odd. And it was also the fifth highest grossing movie of 1985 and won two Oscars, the aforementioned Best Supporting Actor role for Don Ameche, and Best Visual Effects, which now seems kind of quaint when you compare them to the visual effects in, say, Avatar, The Way of Water. What did you think, Dale, about this film?
Oh, not about Avatar, The Way of Water, which I'm probably still watching.
I haven't seen it.
So long. Yeah, now I want to talk about that. Yes, Cocoon is, and this comes up a lot with me, where I'm like, oh, Cocoon. And, you know, first off, as we'll get into later, the quest to find Cocoon is almost as interesting as the movie, right? But I feel like about a third into it, I'm like, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen this before. But so many of the scenes are so iconic. Brian Dennehy holding his eye is like literally iconic. There's so many moments like that where I'm like, oh, well, I've seen this. But then it's huge swaths of plot that I'm like, dolphins? What? That I don't remember. So I'm not sure if
the whole beginning, yeah. The whole beginning before they get to the retirement home, I had no recollection of that.
Absolutely. Which I think is really interesting. Overall, I enjoyed it. And I think that's just through the sheer power and charisma of the actors. There are so many things that are silly, some just because it's 1985 and others that I just think are maybe questionable choices. But I really loved, like, as you're kind of talking about that first third, it's filmed in such a weird way, almost like a documentary style, not only because of just the rest home is, you know, very depressing, seems very real. Even like the sound, like people talking, it almost seemed like a documentary. Like there was just all these touches where it was just an odd film, but I felt like it was really powerful and I assume intentional, right? Ron Howard, very gifted, even just starting out. Probably intentional just to kind of get you steeped into the life of these older characters before the supernatural business begins. But very charming. And all my favorite scenes are because of just the charisma and gravity of the actors.
The actors are all great. And, you know, Raquel Welch's daughter, Tawny Welch, was in there.
I was going to say, not all of the actors were great.
Yeah, she wasn't brilliant. She's very pretty.
I feel like Nastasia Kinski was sick. And so they got... I just felt like some of her, and again, it's sort of like when she first came out, like, oh, she had just some horrible line and horrible delivery. But then when I was sort of thinking about it later, it's like, maybe that was because of her character not being quite human, right? But anyway, mm-hmm. Yeah, so Tawny Welch, and this, I think, is an early Steve Guttenberg film.
Back when he was charming.
Well, yeah.
Back when he was charming, I understand that recently he's been trying to push his screenplays on people.
Oh.
And he's of a certain age himself now, right? We were the age he was when he played that role. So, and that's when I saw this movie. So again, possibly for, I've got to stop saying again, Four Quadrants, people are going to equivocate, but you know, young, old, I was young when I saw this movie and I liked it, even though it was mostly about older people. But there was aliens in it. Older people would like it. You know, let's just go to the possibly upsetting criteria right now because we're here. There's a retirement
puck.
Home.
Okay. Yeah. So now for the puck, aka trigger warning. Yes.
Right. We're in a retirement home. It, like you said, there's an opening scene that's quite depressing as they move through the lobby, I believe it is, of this retirement home. Just fast forward.
Right, yeah, where they see the guest, the other,
yeah. It's just not pleasant. And Don Ameche, it's his take on what he's seeing, which is what we're seeing, which is these older people in the retirement home. Okay, we're all gonna get older, but the way it's shot, it just makes you go, oh, that I don't wanna be there. And so, that could be upsetting, but just fast forward through that and you'll get to the point.
There's something later also where another character passes, but she, you know, she's dealing with dementia or Alzheimer's as well. So that could possibly be upsetting too. But yeah, the scene you brought up, I feel to me, it was the most visceral, like, ugh.
Right, right. And what I loved about it though, is this whole idea that the guys, before they have stepped into that pool with the pods that give them the youthful vigor, they are wanting to live. There's one who kind of backs off and he doesn't really want to go in the pool. He's not the threesome. But the three that they are not ready to die. And I think that this gets into something, again, this is old ladies find money. People don't quit just because they're older. They don't stop wanting to live a full life just because they're older. And so that's what this film, for me, captured.
Yeah. And I feel like Don Ameche, of course, he's sort of the rest home Lothario, right? He's the most libidinous. Well, no, that's not true. That's not true.
He's single.
He's single, right. There is another, yeah, there is another character who cheats. But yeah, how that is handled, like I think there's one scene where after their first dip in the fountain of youth, so be it, they all notice that they have boners. And that was just hilarious, and it seemed very natural. Although I think Wilfred Brimley said something about his erection was so strong that a cat couldn't scratch it. And that kind of got in my head a little bit. But yeah, I thought all that was handled really well. And, you know, it wasn't played for laughs. It was very sweet.
Yeah.
Is Hugh Cronin, who had cancer, right, in the film?
Yes, and it's gone after being in the pool with the pods.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't end well for the aliens, but I went looking for this film because I remembered loving it, like I said before, when I was young. And it wasn't because it starred older people or Steve Guttenberg, though he's cute. I just wanted, and this time watching it, I wanted to see if it held up because I haven't seen it since it originally came out. I had missed, like we talked about, a lot of the stuff about quality of life and maybe more important than the is more important than the quantity. For me back then, it was just about aliens. I think watching Jules recently, which is in the theater, which is another film about older people and aliens, I wanted to see how Cocoon compared, but I want to be able to tell people where to go and find it, but it's really hard to find. It's available or out there. You can rent it. I rented it again at Movie Madness, our fabulous, fabulous store here in Portland, Oregon. They wanted to make sure that I'd had multiple rentals before they let me have it because they can't get another one. You can find copies online, but they are usually either filmed on someone's phone if they had the hard copy to watch, or they are some other format that was made for foreign markets. People have gone down rabbit holes, all kinds of holes, asking why they can't find Cocoon in this country. It's out of print. But why is it out of print when you can get Cocoon 2, which is not a good movie? You can stream Cocoon 2, but why not Cocoon 1? What were the deals that were made back there that they can't just even press new DVDs? Somebody out there in internet land said that another person who had some relationship to this film claims it has something to do with music rights. Okay, but there were music rights that were granted at the time to make DVDs. So did those go away as of 2014? What changed? I don't understand. There are too many movies that have been made in 1985 and beyond that have remained on streaming. Why? There is a conspiracy, folks. There's a conspiracy. Do you know anything about this conspiracy, Dale?
I pray and I hope that if the reason that Cocoon is not widely available is because of the horrible breakdance music that totally killed the vibe for me, that would be just a great tragedy. I can't imagine what else. It's not like there's some sort of, you know, Kenny Loggins B-side in the film. So I don't understand that, but no, I was surprised too. And I do think it's a cruel twist of fate that Cocoon 2, which I haven't seen, is so widely available. But Cocoon, which is sort of an iconic 80s movie for so many, I don't know what the conspiracy would be. But I always feel like, at least in terms of streaming content, seems to fluctuate as contracts, you know, go in and out, right, of fashion. I don't know. I've noticed that with streaming, but I, like you, I'm confused why you would think the DVD rights would have been worked out.
In perpetuity.
Yeah.
In perpetuity, you would think. I mean, that's what I've always seen in the contracts. Maybe they just didn't want to pay any more money. It wasn't in perpetuity, but that just doesn't seem logical. It was Lily Zanuck. Lily and Richard Zanuck were the producers. Ron Howard was the director. These people weren't amateurs who made this film, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to go down and start asking questions, hopefully this won't come back to bite me, but you can write to Ron Howard's reps. You can write to Lily Zanuck's reps and say, why can't I get a DVD of Cocoon? And you can also go into your own video library, video and DVD library, find out if you have Cocoon, because you might be able to sell it for lots of money on eBay.
That's a great point. And also, glass with dentures in it half full, it might be a good excuse for you to seek out your local DVD purveyor.
At this point, I think every town should open a DVD store, because this is just going to keep happening. Movies we want to see, we can't see. And not everyone can stream the Criterion Collection. Not that this movie would ever be in the Criterion Collection. But, you know, if you don't know what the Criterion Collection is, it's classic movies that you can stream.
Although I feel like as they go on, their reach is broader. So you never know. There might be the Criterion special edition of Cocoon, for all we know.
Criterion. Yeah, that could happen. So as far as hating, it was really just the breakdance music?
Oh, yeah. I hated it because it was bad and worthy of my hate. But also, I think the one thing that made Cocoon rather enduring is, well, there's always the 1980s problem. And I feel like the tone, at first the tone bugged me. Like it seemed like Steve Guttenberg seemed like, you know, he was just like totally broad and, you know, going all in on his comedic relief role. And there didn't seem to be anything else to him, which I still stand behind. But then after a while, I kind of warmed up to this sort of jagged tone and sort of chalked it up to like, okay, this is the 80s where you have all these juggling tones and it's okay. As far as my problems, like, you know, the effects seem really cheesy now, even though they're industrial light and magic and apparently Oscar worthy. So that was kind of like, and that sort of dated it. Yeah, I thought Steve Guttenberg, you know, he charming, sure, but I feel like it's not necessarily his problem, but he just had so many, you know, kind of horny type line, like him commenting on how horny the dolphins were and his basically peeping Tom scene with Tawny Welch, which, you know, it furthers the plot, but there's just all these things that seem kind of like, you know, Police Academy-ish. I don't know. So I felt like he was,
yeah,
his lines were kind of silly.
You know, it's dated today. I think it holds up on one level, but I think if it were going to be made today, one of the people that was going to go in that pool and start feeling young was going to be a woman. Mm-hmm. In this version, it's just the men. And Jessica Tandy is left being sort of grumpy when her on-screen, off-screen husband, Hume Cronyn, is invigorated by the alien seep into the pool, as it were. And she just looks kind of mean. And I just felt like the women in the story were not fleshed out as they would be if this movie was made today. And it's also very white. It's also a very white film.
Very white. I have a question for you. I don't know if this gets into spoiler territory, but for some reason, after it ended, I had a lot of questions about the aliens. Well, first off, young Brian Dennehy is still creepy as fuck, right? He always has just that, you know.
Really? I don't think he's creepy.
I feel like, well, you think Steve Guttenberg's charming, so we agree to disagree, right?
Well, no, I think he's creepy, broad, but cute. If he just keep his mouth closed, he was attractive, I guess is what I meant. He was cute. And his character was doing nice things for people and aliens. So I liked his character, even though he was sort of a bit.
Well, and I don't know if it's Brian Dennehy's roles that he would play after this kind of colored. Like at first, at times he seemed sort of like George Costanza's older brother. But I kept waiting for him to be mean or Brian Dennehy-ish, kind of creepy. But then his character actually wasn't. He was very sweet. But anyway, Questions about the freaking cocoons. Okay, so, and we could get this out if it gets spoilery, but these aliens, these Antarians, come to Earth in a ship, right? All of them. But they can't all go back together because there wasn't enough room. I didn't understand that. Why couldn't they all go back together? And also, are Antarians a race of beings that just go, oh, well, because it seemed like once the cocoon started withering, they were like, yeah, we'd have to get a boat and do stuff. And we can't, you know, and then like, well, let's, and then Wilford Brimley rescue, like, well, let's do it now. And the aliens are like, Oh, okay. See ya. We'll see you guys another 11,000. I just didn't, there was a lot that didn't make sense to me about the whole alien thing.
It's really funny how the human mind will try and make things make sense as we watch things. And so to me, it was not, oh, why did they get left behind? Why wasn't there room? How did they all get here in the first place? If they're all came together, why can't they all leave together? I just said to myself, well, maybe the spaceship needed more thrust to get out of Earth's atmosphere, so they needed to dump some of the pods, and they were safe at the bottom of the ocean for 11,000 years or whatever. And then they were such an advanced society that they didn't want to leave their men pods, women pods, on the battlefield, so they had to come back and get them. Now, why they would be able to go from salt water to chlorinated pool water, that was a big problem for me.
Right. And then the euthanizing properties of the water, then Brand Dennehy was like, oh, the life force is drained out of the water. So it's like, did the life force come from the cocoons, I assume, or?
Yes, from the aliens inside the cocoons.
Okay. So they had a euthanizing thing. And I do like Brand Dennehy was sort of, I liked his little moments where he's like, oh, and I said we should land in the North Pole, but no, you know, we're here in Florida with all these people, so.
Okay, it's silly.
Yeah, it's silly, and you're right. I mean, it's, again, you're supposed to be focusing on the life story of the main characters, and the aliens are just sort of the setup for making you think. And I feel, and there's like one moment, this always gets me a theme for this certain type of movie where a character is given this great gift, and then it's taken away. And so when the characters are, you know, can't go back to the rejuvenating pool and start reverting back to their old selves, that was like super sad to me, kind of like Charlie, the movie, The Flowers for Algernon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that whole trope always really gets me.
Yeah, I don't know. There are holes. They're definitely holes, but I've been watching a TV show, and we're going to talk about it, but like they're just holes left and right. I don't know why we tolerate holes in modern television. You'd think that writers would figure it out by now, but anyway. But any parting remarks? I didn't hate anything about it.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so you didn't hate anything about it. Okay, good on you. You're a better person.
No.
I'm so full of hate.
I liked it, and it was very nostalgic for me to watch. Mm-hmm. Sweet, cute. Do I have problems with some of the plot? Yes. Do I have problems with the couple of the performances? Yes. But not Brian Dennehy's. Funnily enough, I don't have that sort of picture in my mind of Brian Dennehy as a bad guy. The only things I've seen him in have been, he's been good, a good guy. I know his daughter.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Well, I don't mean
I do know his daughter.
Your friend's dad.
Yeah.
No, and I don't think, I feel like I for some reason, my Brian Dennehy experiences have been him as being, you know, the gruff sergeant or the duplicitous operative, or I don't know. There's just something about him that makes me uneasy.
Oh.
But that's on me. That's about me. But we also probably should briefly talk about the CAC, the age appropriate casting, which I feel there's not much to talk about because I feel like the actors are playing, you know, characters that are their age. I don't think there was any discrepancies whatsoever.
Nope. And it wasn't like Tawny Welch was getting it on with Don Ameche. We didn't have to look at that.
Thank goodness.
Tawny Welch was the objectified love interest of Steve Guttenberg, and they were cast appropriately together.
He's 22. He was 29. So that seems fine.
I guess it's okay.
Andy's 76. Hume Cronin, 73. Somehow they make it work.
Driving Miss Daisy, for people who might not remember, she's Driving Miss Daisy.
But yes, I think overall, and I'm curious though, like Ron Howard did Splash, right?
Yeah.
Which was after. So we're kind of wondering if this is his first film or not. If only there was an interconnected web of computers that would help us.
Or Google, something called Google. Hmm. Shall I look?
There's a lot of great lines with the main characters, just their camaraderie. Again, rather like another movie that we reviewed, Waking Ned Divine, there's sort of a scamp aspect, you know, when they're youthened, it kind of becomes like cocoonies, right? Where they're sort of like, oh, you know, they feel like teenage boys on some sort of mission. But yeah. Oh, another terrible
yes.
was the mother, right? The mother of the little boy. I felt she was terrible. Sorry.
Oh, right. Yeah, she was not great. Grand Theft Auto was his directorial debut, and he had not yet left Happy Days.
Wow.
So there you go. And where is the Night Shift, which is a funny movie, by the way. Then Splash. Cocoon was after Splash.
Oh, the after Splash of, yeah, interesting. Okay.
Very.
Because it felt like a movie where maybe somebody was still working their thing out a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah. So much for our, you know, being brilliant critics.
Right.
But the point is, we're just telling you whether you might like the movie. We're not filling you in on all the details about everybody. And you might want to cut that part out because that really kind of does make us look kind of dumb. I should have looked that up ahead of time, but whatever. So is that it, man? Is there anything else to check in?
I would feel like Cocoon needs to be watched for all its wrinkles. And the quest to find Cocoon, I think, is a worthy one. That's all I have. I stayed up late last night, which is weird for me. So I'm running out of steam. But yeah, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Great. Well, my ass problems persist.
Okay.
For those who might be checking in for the first time, I have a hamstring sciatic piriformis ischial tuberosity issue.
Oh.
It's probably age related, but to the time when I was 23 and I tore my hamstring, it's just never recovered. It's just never gotten better. And these things, they come back to haunt you. So if you're young, take care of your body because you don't want to get to be 60 plus and have these issues. That's about all I have to say.
And I just quickly, first off, yes. Second, right. Third, because I was at a concert last night and I brought ear protection. And this, I worry so much about my son, who's a musician, who loves concerts and just will not do ear protection. So that's another thing, is take care of your body, take care of your ears. I know it feels wonderful to be, you know, part of this, you know, musical sacrament, immersive experience, but, you know, it's okay. Ear pods are getting better. You know, you'll still be part of it. And then maybe you won't have tinnitus when you're my age.
Dale, you're a musician. Were you wearing earplugs when you were a musician when you were his age?
I think I was not.
Okay. Well, we'll talk later. Anna Nicholas here.
Dale Basie, as always.
Till next time. Watch movies.
See you later, uncertain folk.
I'm ready for my close-up yesterday.
Uncertain.
Do you feel lucky?
That's all.
Uncertain.
Come on up and see me sometime.